past decade has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry. Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself with only a low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, and because we didn't have time to pull this off, but I can at least I think I can make this happen here for those of you that might be too young.
In any climb where people lie, a rockin' time, and stay away both day and night. Everybody's feeling good and right.
Look at me,
sat down in the middle.
I wanna be
sat down in the middle.
That's your man, David Johansen, and for those that only think of Looney from Let It Ride, as just a funny comic relief character actor, that's really him, and Buster Poindexter persona. That album was a sensation. Hammer, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'd forgotten how great a tune that was until I mentioned this Arkansas Bred Maiden Special smack dab in the middle of the card, and it made me think I had to pull it up.
Hey, I get it. Music sends off a lot of stuff through their memories, and there's actually a lot of few horses in today that strike some music. But it's funny, I hear you. Earlier, a few minutes ago, talk about the old text in the morning, which I got this morning at 5:30. Are you up? And I guess. And you know what? In a racing world, it's never too early. It's only too late. So it's not a big deal. But for some reason, it used to be a phone call. Are you up yet? Now it's a text. But it's the same thing, of course, because you find your ears are so attuned to your text tone that, they could be your phone could be across the crowded restaurant and, whatever tone is, you immediately, perk up. So, if I could have answered you, I would have said no this morning. I wasn't up, but I usually am. But anyway, it's pretty funny. Are you up? Yeah, I'm up. But, I was up last night. I was up later than normal because I wanted to. Well, I was telling you, I had taped this movie a few days ago, and I wanted to watch it, The French Connection, and I hadn't seen that in a long time. And so I stayed up to watch it because there was some discussion on the you know, there was a Turner Classic Movies about the car chase and how it was the best car chase and all. So I watched the movie that I really probably haven't seen in 25 years. And it was good, but I didn't think it was great when I watched it again. And I didn't think the car chase was great either. I mean, because he really wasn't chasing anybody. He was chasing a subway car. So a reevaluation of the French Connection. Great movie. You know, I think it won picture. I think Gene Hackman won, and he's great in it, but it's not a lot of dialogue. But anyway, I still put the bullet car chase with Steve McQueen up in San Francisco way ahead of the French Connection car chase. But anyway, enough
well,
of that. But that's
I hold that. This bears further examination.
I might bear a little bit there.
The French Connection, and I don't mind that there's a lack of dialogue. It's a bit of a painstaking, and in fact, the lack of dialogue and the pacing by William Friedkin, it kind of mirrors, you know, what Popeye Doyle, what the, you know, Eddie Egan, what the investigation entailed, you know, them sitting there and you know, them trying to make a case and build something,
right,
and wait for something to happen. I mean, and that scene when they're breaking down the car and you know, the Lincoln to, you know, to find the heroine is unbelievable. The tension that keeps, you know, the frustration, and I absolutely love the French Connection, and it's amazing to me that it isn't. I mean, other than the, you know, New York City, it's also a great time capsule, frankly, of New York City. But it doesn't. It's not dated. I mean, it holds up.
No, it's still a fantastic movie. I had it in my head as being like just this, just gripping, you know. Which that's what the non-dialogue does, as you say, you know, makes you watch and pay attention to the little things. And a nice, you know, 1970s, early 70s view of the streets in New York. It was great. It was very good. Gene Hackman's one of my favorite actors. And, I mean, I just thought it was, you know, elevated up higher than I thought. And I was telling you, I thought... I'm a big Jack Reacher guy, and read all the books, and his character is a very unique one. And when they came out with a movie, I was all really excited. I was thinking, man, who's going to play Jack Reacher? And they came up with Tom Cruise, and Tom Cruise is not even close to the stature of Jack Reacher. And in my mind, a 20-year-old, you know, 1990s type Gene Hackman would have been a perfect Jack Reacher, just the way his demeanor is and his toughness is and all that. But it was a great movie. I love watching those things. But I was just, you know, that much disappointed that it wasn't as big as I want. But and I knew I would you know, once I brought it up, I knew you would have your comments.
Well,
you're such a big buff. But
what about I'll make a correlation here too, because you're talking about the great car chase scene in Bullet with Steve McQueen, but the sequel to The French Connection, The Seven Ups, Roy Scheider gets involved in a car chase that ends up with him plowing into the back of a tractor trailer, which is an unbelievable car chase sequence that is probably highly underappreciated in car chase discussions.
I didn't realize that. And for those that forget, Roy Scheider was in The French Connection, but, you know, was obviously the co-star, and it's kind of, you know, you think of him immediately as, you know, in a boat, in a Jaws movie. And so that was made in 71, and Jaws came out not that much later. So he was, you know, a really, well-known actor at the time, but didn't follow up with a whole lot of stuff. But seeing him in there was kind of neat too. You know, Roy Scheider. It was great acting. It was great, but I was that much.
I'm horrified by this. What about Tony LoBianca as Sal? Tony LoBianca is unbelievable in The French Connection.
I'm saying it was fantastic. It was a 9. It just wasn't a 10.
This is boy. Wait till Jay Hovde gets a hold of you.
Oh, that's all right. You know, what can I tell you? That was my initial reaction. I was really, not that I was disappointed. It was good. It was like, oh man, I was looking for more. I know the scene where he goes in the bar and he rouses everybody, you know, you listening to me and it's fancy. Okay. You know what? It's starting to get better as I'm talking to you.
You've been picking your feet in Poughkeepsie. There you go.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's some great lines. All right, I'm reevaluating now. So tonight I'm going to watch Bullet. I'm going to find Bullet. I'm going to watch that because I just remember that just being, you know, as a kid, like, oh man, that was the greatest car chase thing ever. And Steve McQueen was more of a, you know, a hero type after, The Great Escape, you know, even the motorcycle and stuff. So he was more the daredevil type that with the cars. So anyway,
watch the Seven Ups. Go try to find the Seven Ups, which is something of an obscurity as a sequel to the French Connection.
I'm writing it down. And another movie, I think I mentioned this a couple of years ago, to watch was the Seven Days to Vegas. It's a hidden gem that only us degenerate gamblers would get. But write that one down. 7 days to Vegas. Anyone who's seen it will just have a little smile on their face right now. But just gut that movie out, and you'll really appreciate it. So that's how busy we are in the racetrack scene here. Not a whole lot going on here. It's funny having you talking to Eric. Boy. That was a year ago that we did that panel thing in Hot Springs, right? With the HB tape. Doesn't seem like it was that long ago. But you mentioned, you know, fans out there, they're listening, obviously, bring up these conventions that, people put on and different groups put on, but they are open to the public. And, you know, I think you would be fascinated to just go to one of these things, like the one in Arizona and the HBPA. It's a little bit more, you know, horsey, not as open, but you can still go and sit in the back of the room and listen to the panelists and really get some up to date information. And, you know, believe it or not, you get to walk up to people. They got the name tag on and you can say, hey, how you doing? And people will talk to you. So I know it's not a, ooh, it's a thrilling thing. It's not like going to the races. But if you're interested in stuff like that, you want to learn a little bit, go ahead and pay the $100 or whatever it is to go to these things, sit in the back of the room. You will come away with a different feel. So I did that a couple times, I remember. But if you're around New Orleans, check it out. And Hotel Monteleone is the first place I ever stayed in New Orleans.
Oh, how funny.
Yeah. And when we used to go down there and hustle for Monmouth Park in the early 90s, I remember the name, but, you know, in the old days when you went to New Orleans, you didn't remember too much after that. But I do remember that was kind of cool staying there, but first time I never stayed there again. We used to stay on Royal Street. I think there was try to get the balcony overlooking, I forget the name of it, but anywhere down there is great, so I enjoy that one. But Santa Anita, racing out here right now. It's not raining today, but it's going to rain tomorrow, Saturday, and so they've already canceled. There's a rule in place now. I think it's a CHRB rule, even that they're not running on sealed racetracks or sloppy racetracks. And in the whole scheme of things, it's not that many days, but safety wise, they found that that's just the way to go. And sometimes when you just have a rule, it just takes the pressure off of everybody. So here's the deal: it's going to rain, just cancel. So they did it early. Got to move some of the races around, and we're in a little hopscotch. So it's not raining today. It's going to rain tomorrow. Hopefully, it's not going to rain Sunday. They'll try and get that card in. But as you see, it's an all-dirt card. And then Monday, it might rain again. And, aside from the people that had damage to their houses or properties, which is a terrible thing, the rain has been very welcome here. As it pours and rains and you're driving around and going in and out of store, people are smiling like, oh, isn't this great? Because we have not seen rain in a while. And I just read this morning, which never happens in this type of stuff, we have moved down a level in the drought scale. Usually they say that it's the wrong kind of rain and it's not the right snow and they give you all this stuff. But we are now not in extreme drought. We are just in a drought. So that is a huge thing. So if you see people doing cartwheels in the street and this morning and some, you know, LA videos, that's why. No, they never say that stuff. So that's how much it's rained out here. And, you know, it's come in waves. So anyway, no racing tomorrow. Hopefully there will definitely be racing on Sunday. And then Monday will be a question mark as well. And then after that, it looks open for a while. So, yeah, not a whole lot going on. They did move the one stake once, the La Cañada. Steve, can you pronounce that correctly? Follow me. La Cañada.
I've always pronounced it correctly, but okay. Yeah.
You know, they don't put the little tilde over the end. But so this used to be part of the female version of the Stroop series. This was used to be a 4-year-old race. Phillies 4. It's got to be 10, 15 years ago we changed it. But, you know, back in the day, that we had enough colts and fillies that you could run a separate division of just 4-year-old fillies and then have them meet up later at the, I think, Santa Margarita, Santa Maria with the older ones. But no longer the case. So this became 4 and up and it's been pushed a little bit earlier in the meet. And I'll tell you what, and when the whole scheme of things, and we talk about this during our greatest stake meetings, older stakes earlier in the year around the country have just are harder and harder the quality is not maintained. It seems historically now after the Breeders' Cup, after, you know, pushing to get to the Breeders' Cup, you know, there's a lot of just give them a break, especially for the girls. The boys obviously have a lot of big dollar races to go to. With the Pegasus and the races overseas. But they just, the fillies just don't come back as quick as they used to. And so anyway, that's, you see a lot of smaller fields throughout earlier in the year, especially going long in the dirt. But six fillies going here. It's a goofball group, however we want to say it. I can't really zero in on too much. The La Brea, which obviously was the first leg of this series in the day. There's three horses coming out of that race, going short, stretching out here, seeing what we got. Kristen Bach on the rail with Sadler, who's an allowance type horse, but didn't run bad in La Brea, but second in the Dazia Park Oaks. If the style in here looks like there's a lot of speed, and if you can have someone lay off the pace a little bit, maybe, and not get too separated from the front. Kristen Bach maybe fills that checks that box. The two Baffert horses, Gandora, Under the Stars, he's just been so tough on here in the dirt races, whether they're stakes or allowance races or maiden races. I mean, I guess one of his has to do well. Gandora and Under the Stars, maybe has a better style and doesn't necessarily need the lead. Maybe put her on top of the others. But this is a crazy, like I said, tough to put a circle around one of these. And you'll see that throughout. But the rest of the card is not bad. There's some allowance races. The race before is a 2-of-the-then sprint for some nice horses. I see Hopkins. I mentioned music. Nikki Hopkins always comes to mind. You remember Nikki Hopkins?
I don't know if I do. No.
Well, Nikki Hopkins, it comes to mind. He's one of the all-time greatest studio and like play-along pianist that you will ever hear. And I always remember, I used to go see the Stones a lot. When Mick Jagger would introduce the Rolling Stones, and we'd go, and Nikki Hopkins on piano. But he's played with, you look him up, he's played with everybody. So it always comes to mind, Nikki Hopkins. He's like the Glenn Campbell of the piano. I mean, just, he's been on a million things. But anyway, another Baffert horse, you know, coming off a long effort in the San Antonio, which I guess you got to try it once, and, you know, didn't belong, and, settles back down to a sprint with Juan Hernandez, who's the leading rider, who Baffert has really latched onto. Their winning percentage together is really good. So not that it's not good with anybody else, but done well. And here's that Starlight group with SF Racing. They've got a lot of horses out here with Bob, and we'll see them throughout the year. But Hopkins looks tough in there, as does Mark Glatz Traeger on the outside, but a very contentious race there. The first race has that high priced we can call them 3-year-olds now, because you see the L1. Now they're allowed. They weren't allowed to use Lasix last week, but this week they can on Lasix because they're 3. So it's one of those crazy, goofy things. Hijazi, the $3.5 million purchase is in. This race was on Saturday, and the redraw sees him going on the rail. Not too many times you can see a maiden with 100 buyer that didn't win. And he has that distinction. He's running against a couple of good ones, so he'll be tough in there. And then you have Worcester, the other Baffert in here. I don't know if that's named after the city or the sauce, to tell you the truth, but another second time out of the box, this has a look of a runner as well. And, you know, once again, I keep talking about these Bob Baffert horses on the dirt, but, he does well. There's another horse in here from the John Sheriff's barn, Sully. I don't know if that's named after the pilot or not, but he is making his start after a pretty darn good debut down at Del Mar. So we'll keep an eye on him. A good card made it dirt because of the weather. The turf will probably be a little soggy still on Sunday, so they took the safe route. And we'll have a little bit more news next week to go over. I didn't check, but I don't know if that Coast to Coast Pick 5 obviously probably will not go on Saturday.
Cancel for Saturday.
It does make sense because we only got one coast. But we'll have a little bit more news to announce next weekend on things. And other than that, I don't have a whole lot. Music-wise, I'll give my one more music thing. I got a Bruce Springsteen's latest tour, and I don't know if it's his last one or not, but I can't take the chance. And I noticed he's not playing in anywhere in California. And so I guess where I'm going to see Bruce Springsteen next month. What city?
Well, Tina and I just discussed this too, and she pointed it out. But February, not
starts
sure.
I'm going to Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Oh, very cool.
Yes, so he's not out here, which, like I said, usually when he played here for years and years and years and years, and I'm talking a long time, he used to play at the Sports Arena, which was actually the first sporting event I ever saw, a hockey game there. The Clippers used to play there, and it's right next to the Coliseum, and after the Forum went up, and the Staples just kind of sat there. USC played there, played college ball there, but back in the day, something happened where he I think the Sports Arena guy must have done Bruce a favor, because every time he came to town, he played there. And the last event held there was about 5 years ago, and it was a Springsteen show. And so maybe that, since that's not around, he doesn't come to LA anymore. But looked on the map, and the tickets were pretty high. And I said, you know what, let me check. I went to Kansas City, and I go, not bad. And I went to Tulsa, and I go, wow. And very reasonable. I got a great floor seats. And so making a run to Tulsa in February to go see Bruce. So that's what we got this morning. Not a whole lot. We'll be back on the racing track next week. And the weather will hopefully be sunny. And we can look forward to that. So good to talk early. I get to start my day early today and get out and go on a little hike and enjoy it.
Nice. Hammer, I appreciate it, and we'll talk next week.
Sounds great.
There we go.
See you.
Away they go, everybody. And Tina was looking. She also was, because she's not ever seen Springsteen. I have, and I saw him at in Landover at was it at the new stadium. Right? It must have been at FedEx. So I've only ever seen him once. It's funny, he came to Colgate. He played at Colgate the year before. I think when I got there in 78, and he played in 77. Colgate would, the student association would have a they were plugged in to those booking agents and could manage to get huge acts on, like, in between nights. If somebody was going from Boston to Buffalo, or you know, from, they were going to stop in Syracuse or you know, anywhere, both Colgate and Cornell, and the student associations would pull in these. I mean, the Grateful Dead played at Colgate, and Andy tells me it's a famous show. I saw the Dead at Cornell, I think it's 76. They played a. We saw Little Feet right in proximity to when Lowell George died. They came to Colgate one night, and probably one of the most famous concerts ever. Bob Marley on Halloween, 79 or 80, 70, I want to say 79. I think I was a sophomore. Marley on Halloween, which was unbelievable. Unbelievable. Yeah. So the mention of Springsteen sends me off into and oddball directions. We also now have to make a couple of decisions direction-wise about Shamblin and Shapiro, because I got Dave Hill, and I think probably let me see if Keith is can be because let me see if Keith can bounce around just a little bit. Yeah, I think that's probably what we're going to do, because I wait, Hammer. Wait, I thought it was going to be an interlude with Hammer, and we managed to find plenty to talk about, including, by the way, I'm aghast at his take on that. That was very troubling. The French Connection not measuring up. Come on, Hammer. My God, that was. I'm going to turn him over to Hovde to straighten him out on that front, because, yeah, I can still watch Tina even. Tina even when the French Connection pops up on the screen, she'll hold the, you know, she'll put down the remote and let it unspool. Wow. And you know what? It's not just the car chase. There's a million things going on. I mean, the ending obviously is incredible. Everything involving Fernando Rey, Frog One, and Tony LoBianco, and Hammer. I also am troubled by the. The take on the rest of Scheider's career. he impugned Roy Scheider, the rest of Roy's career. I'm a huge Roy Scheider fan, because after Jaws, we've talked about Wages of Fear and Sorcerer, all that jazz. What about Joe Gideon playing Ray Fosse and Ray Fosse. That's for those that can make the connection between Ray Fosse and Bob Fosse. There are tons of great Roy Scheider performances. He was never a leading man, really. I mean, Jaws was kind of an unusual circumstance. You know what's a favorite too of Scott Shapiro joins us, and who's familiar? And this is obscure. Here's an obscurity. Hammer gave you 7 days to Vegas, and I gave you the Seven Ups. You want a Scheider thriller, police thriller, set in. Helicopters, in surveillance helicopters, Blue Thunder. Shap, you ever see Blue Thunder?
No, outside of my league. I know who Ray Fosse is much more because I collected baseball cards as a youth. Catcher for the Brewers, right?
He and the Indians. He caught for the Indians.
Indians, that's right, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
And famously, the collision at home plate with
right.
Pete Rose in the 71 All-Star game.
Pete Rose, that's right. That's
70 or 71?
I was -3 or -4.
Oh, so I was wow. Thank you. Thanks for that.
Sorry. I don't feel young at this point, so I'm not afraid to gloat when I can.
Well, I can tell you one thing about that collision. And of course, you know, Ray Fosse was never he was never the same. His career dissipated and was diminished by that injury when we were kids. That All-Star game was the most exciting thing. That was a highlight of every summer because they both, you know, the American and National League players had blood dripping from their fangs to beat each other. It was right. it was always something to look forward to. Our family, we were traveling, vacationing, and my dad and I watched that in the basement bar at the Otis Saga Hotel in Cooperstown.
Wow.
That's where I was watching that game.
That's a cool memory to have, Cooperstown. Man, I haven't been there in a long time, but a couple great trips there.
It's the greatest, yeah. And you don't even have to go to the hall to love being in Cooperstown. The lake is fabulous. Tina
yes.
and I, we took a little getaway weekend. There's the Fenimore Cooper Museum. There's the Glimmerglass Opera House. There's, oh my God, it's this fabulous restaurants, the Horn Dorset.
One of many in that area, you know, in
yeah.
New England and that area. And I don't got to tell you, obviously, but I have fond memories of many a summer trip up to New England and upstate New York and whatnot as a kid coming up from the South Jersey area for sure. And it was 1970, I can confirm.
There you go. Thank you. I knew 70 yeah. or 71. So I was 11 years old, or I was going to be 11. And my dad took me down into the bar. It feels like that, but it could have been, you know, one TV. This was an era when there wasn't, you know, TVs in every bar. Yeah, there were plenty of places where TVs had not yet pervaded, you know, but it,
right.
this was, I mean, it's so distinct in my memory, watching that game. Anyway. All right. Shap, what do we got? Let's talk.
Yeah, let's talk. I did my normal work at Turfway and then looked at some of the bigger races at Oaklawn Park tomorrow as well. I guess we can start out with a couple today at Turfway.
All right.
Build the bankroll for the weekend. And let's start with race 5. Kicks off the late pick 4. And it's a maiden special, 1/16 for 3-year-old fillies. And I like an import coming in from the Mid-Atlantic in number 7, Silent Story. I think should get a pretty honest pace in here. Ran a couple of credible races in Maryland for former trainer Brittany Russell. Now enters the Red Hot Paulo Lobo barn. You get Gerardo Corrales. And just ran into a buzzsaw last time out in a race that really didn't set up her late run. Safine, who won the race, was 1-5 in there. I think this horse should take a step forward here. I think it's a little bit of a softer bunch, and we're getting 5-1. So hopefully we can work out a trip with Corrales aboard.
All right. No, give us the race. I didn't get the race right now.
All good. Race 5 tonight. So 7:55 Eastern Post, first post. It kicks off. Pretty good late pick 4, as usual.
Silent Story, the 7 in the 5th.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And then I'm going to take a little bit of a swing in the featured 7th, the first level allowance event. I think it's a wide open race. Don't fully trust the favorites. Bourbon Heist, maybe the light bulb came on after running second 6 times out of the first 12 starts. I'm burning a ton of money. But willing to take that one on, as well as a couple of the other horses I expect to take the bulk of the money. Number 4, Run Rapidash, has not raced deep since May 14th at Churchill, gone 5.5 panels over the Churchill side. But he ran some really good races, in the spring before that race, including the maiden breaker over the surface in late January, getting close to a year to the day. And he won by 6 lengths that day. And I think if he can avoid getting caught up in an early battle, which is a potential scenario, being keen off the freshening with other speed signed on to his outside, I think he's got a shot. So at 12-1, we'll take a chance with this Son of Will Take Charge as number 4. Run, Rapid Ash in the 7th.
Nice. Victor LeBron and Matt Kordenbrock. Cool.
Yes, sir. So, yeah, I mean, question mark, we need the right price. So if he gets bet too far down from the 12-1, I'd probably shy away. But at the current price, I like him a little. And I like in the other maiden special towards the back end of the card, I'm going to give a look to number 6, Libertango. This is race 8, the finale at 9:25 Eastern. This is a second-time starter for the Catman. Exits a pretty good race. Gone one turn at Churchill on November 19th. Was 20-1 that day. The winner, Bromley, was a big price that day, but was a pricey Paulo Lobo OXO equine runner that came back and won again over this surface for the same connections. And this horse chased the hot pace, was wide on the back stretch, has been gelded since then, gets more ground, gets LASIK. So don't think it's the strongest group we'll see in the maiden special weight ranks at Turfway this winter. So we'll try number 6, Libertango, at 9-2.
Libertango, Chris Landeros is riding well, and Catman. Cool.
Yes, sir. So hopefully get off to a good start the weekend and head into tomorrow, where I think it's a good card. I struggled to have too many overly creative opinions. I do think in race 3, a $5,000 starter that I'll lean on the 9-5 favorite in there, in a race that looks like 3 horses are going to take just about all the money. It's a pretty cool race for veteran horses, a bunch that have won a lot in their career. But number 7, Enjoy the Music. There's a lot of pace in here. This horse should get a really good trip under Corrales for Ravelli, who's sending live runners in, of course. And hopefully we can get about 2-1 in a race, like I said, where there's 3 horses that'll take the lion's share of the money. And that's race 3 tomorrow at Turfway, 145 first post.
All right.
And then in the stake race, which is the
7.
Likely Exchange. Yeah, yep. Race 7, a $125,000 event for Philly's mares at a mile. Some of these horses exiting the My Charmer, which was on December 11th, including the favorite, Kate's Kingdom, who is 8-5 on the line. This horse has been very impressive and has rattled off a bunch of good performances, some in Canada, one at Presque Isle, and then the one over the surface last out. Certainly the one to beat, Steve, but I don't know if there's a ton of pace, and she definitely does her best running late. I thought number 1, Temper Time, was a little interesting. Third start of the form cycle for Dale Romans, who's had a pretty good run of it this winter at Florence thus far. And he's off to a good start, 2023. He's won 3 of 11 throughout the country, getting things rolling. Didn't get a terrible trip into My Charmer when she was in the pocket, but did have to wait for room a little while at big odds, and I'm just hoping she can get that similar trip without having to wait. And she's 6-1, so we'll take a chance with number 1, Temper Time, knowing that the favorite is probably the likeliest winner.
I'm not in love with the favorite, Kate's Kingdom. I certainly love what's happened with Will Walden, and there was a wonderful story, by the way. Today's Friday, so it must have been maybe Tuesday. TDN had a really nice piece about Walden and one of his assistants, and you know, those of you that have been following, it's really a kind of a redemptive story, and I recommend that. I don't think Kate's Kingdom has to win here. There's 2 horses I want to point out. Shoshani Moon, the Malibu Moon for Steve Lister and Chris Landeros, is on a 3-race win streak, albeit at Charlestown, going 6.5. But on the bull ring, you know, stretching to a mile here, it should not be that big a deal. And drawn inside, 8-1, Shoshani Moon, I don't see why this can't be. I mean, I'm not going to, you know, I'm aware of the race in March on the synthetic, but I'm going to give her another chance. And then to the outside, Vicky Oliver and Decky Cannon, fair game. Fair game, who I think is 7 or 6 or 8-1. 8-1. So
8-1, yeah, you should get that price, I think, too. It was 39-1 last time. You know, I picture Shawnee Moon for third, I think, is an intriguing wild card. Obviously, questions to answer, like you said, two turns, the all-weather surface questions. But, you know, in good form, I think this has always been a pretty well-meant daughter of Malibu Moon. I remember her getting a lot of early support on debut at Oaklawn Park, I believe. Maybe it was Keeneland. It was one of them. It's below my past performances here. But, she's definitely a wild card. And if you're spreading a little, I certainly can see using her.
There you go. All right, good.
And I don't know, I haven't tuned in thus far. I don't know how much you've dove into the Saturday Oaklawn races or which ones you want to touch on. I've got a couple of opinions, though, if you want.
James had a couple of doubles, the 4th, 5th, and the 9th, 10th. So take us anywhere you want at Oaklawn.
Okay, yeah. I mean, the 4th race, not a tremendous betting race, but it's a very good race for a 3-year-old. You got a couple of promising colts in there, or geldings in the case of number 2, Two Eagles River, who I picked over Verifying, who exits the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. And then I thought Judo was a tiny bit interesting. But who did James pick in there? Two Eagles River?
Two Eagles River.
Yeah, I think this is a serious horse, and playing against Chris Hartman, he's 42% heading into this week, so probably not a great idea. This one is running some really good races. I mean, it's particularly the Victory Formation Lugan Knight Allowance event on November 26th. Still not really sure how we lost that race, but Victory Formation battled back. But fun race. I think it'll probably be one of the favorites that win it, though. In terms of maybe a little bit better gambling-wise, my two plays, I'd say, would be in race 5, where Tales of Home, hopefully the second or third choice. This is a horse that I thought was really pretty impressive on debut for Dallas Stewart, Charles Fipke, homebred, well-bred son of Taylor Bacotti. Almost ran down the 3-5 favorite that day in Parents Pride, and just missed, and then tried two turns at Fairgrounds. I like to cut back for that one. So with number 7, Tales of Home, in the 5th. Who did James go with in there?
He thought Stellar Lily was favorable to the Steve Hobby favorite. It's Asmussen's got the favorite.
Yeah, Val, who I think has got the numbers, the 4, 9-5, will likely take a lot of support, being a My Racehorse runner, and is moving up in class, first time against Special Weight Company. So I could see Stellar Lily on the front end in there. And then my price play of the day is in race 8, which is a $106,000 allowance event, and interesting to see Love Me Some Me for Brad Cox for the first time. They spent $350,000, they being L&L Racing, at the Horses of All Racing sale last year. Wasn't a Tom Drury Barnes. Always had a lot of talent, kind of a little bit of a head case. I think there's a lot of speed. I don't know if number 4, Hazy Command, moved forward, Steve, last time out because of the slop, or the mud, I should say. If that's the case, maybe not a great play, if anything, below the 8-1 morning line. But I was impressed with how she ran, and I think she's going to get a good setup in here. So if the price is right, I am going to gamble on number 4, Hazy Command, in the 8th.
Sounds good. 8-1, Bayerano and Famous Amos.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So, should be a fun weekend. Looking forward to the LeCompte card next week, and talking to you from New Orleans.
We will talk to you from New Orleans, and they'll draw that card tomorrow, and so yes, we'll have the week to peruse and see both the 3-year-olds, male and female, and everything else. That's always you kind of know that things are picking up steam when we get to the LeCompte and to the Southwest next week.
Absolutely, and of the leaderboard competition at Twin
yes.
Spires will heat back up with that. And there's a late pick 5, hit it and split it at Fairgrounds as well, to keep in mind in general. So if you're playing the races down there before that.
Finally, as we go, Dave Hill's going to join us with the wild card weekend. You got an NFL preference?
I definitely am on the, I like the Bengals chances in terms of a future play. In terms of a play this weekend, I'm leaning Jacksonville a little. I don't trust this Charger team. I think getting points at home is going to be good. I think Jacksonville will relish being back in the underdog role after being in the favorite role against Tennessee on last Saturday night. So we'll take a little bit of a chance here with Jacksonville on the money line. They're getting two points most places, so.
All right. James, you and James should get together. He prefers the Bolts. So.
All right. Mono. All right.
Shap, have a great weekend. Look forward to talk to you in New Orleans next week.
Sounds good.
Scott Shapiro, everybody. There's Shap, Scott Shap 34 on your Twitter. And speaking of the weekend, NFL weekend, let's get Dave Hill rolling here. Dave is just coming back from a coral. one of his children, and he has the most adorable and precocious children. Must have had a recital or a choral. What's the difference between a recital and a choral?
I don't think there's any difference. I think it's the same thing.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. Which talented Hill child was performing?
This was Harry, my youngest kid. He's in first grade. So it was just a ridiculous school concert that I'm sure everybody's familiar with. little kids fidgeting and belting out songs at the top of their lungs.
I love it. That's great. Well, we kind of blew the turn yesterday. The excitement around here that overwhelmed the show with Jay Privman being recognized for a special eclipse, and so that threw us into a complete dizzy. So we blew it. But you know what? There was no Thursday game, so there's no harm. And actually, we've had a little bit more line movement, and maybe it'll help everybody in their decision making for the 6 wild card games. But Dave, before anything else, You get to take the well-earned bow for a tremendous season-long job on the regular season in the NFL for the New York Times. Well done.
Thanks. Yeah, I was really surprised. I was, at the beginning of the season, I was just hoping I would be able to break even, win these coin flips at a standard 50% rate, but I did okay. 52%, I think, and that's what you need to pay the VIG. So, so I feel good about that.
Well, and you exceeded, they made you pick every single game as opposed to being able to sort of, for us, for our audience, you ended up, I've got it here. Where is it? You ended up, 13 games over 500, 59, 46 and 3.
That feels good. Yeah. And that was hurt a little bit last week, I think, right? I think I gave some bad ones out last week. Last week was maybe the most difficult week of the season. I actually, in my picks that they did not run in the paper, but I think I sent to you my picks for the whole card, I still broke 500. I think I went 9-6-1 last week. But I think I gave you guys some.
No. You had that policy. You approached it. You were taking anybody of the quote unquote meaningless games. The Giants. You had the Giants with the 14. That paid off. You took Tennessee in the points and covered. Vegas and the Rams in the 6.5. And
yeah, the Rams covered that. Yeah.
And you like Detroit to win outright.
Yeah, okay. So I take it back. For some reason in my mind, I thought I gave you guys some of those losers I had, but I guess I was smart and gave the good picks. Because I won money last week. I definitely, had money on that Titans game. But I also had the, in that Bengals game, I think I pushed, and that was a stressful one to watch. But although the game that was the wildest to watch, if you remember, was the Dolphins. The Dolphins covered in the most spectacular way I've seen a team cover all season, and I was watching it on Red Zone, and anybody else who watches on Red Zone, when the at the end of the game with that lateral, they had this crazy lateral play, and they just ruled them down, and they cut away from it, and they said, okay, well, it's 9-6, and the Dolphins don't cover. And then later, they showed the scoreboard, and they showed 11 points, and I was like, what happened? I was so excited. I went through this roller coaster of emotions of thinking I had just lost all this money to winning money. It was pretty wild, but that's the danger of watching on Red Zone. But they called that one right. That was definitely the right call, and It was a stupendous backdoor cover, which the Dolphins backers can only thank the Jets for.
Well, it's funny that you bring it up, because we watched the end of that game, and because as it happened, the Eagle Giant game was going to be on CBS here upstate, and or I suppose everywhere, but I didn't expect that necessarily. So we were on wherever the Jet game was, and I saw the back judge or whoever it was that was on the goal line. I saw him make the safety sign, and they left. They said 9-6 and blah blah blah. And I thought I that looked like a safety, and I saw him signal safety. And then about a half an hour later, when the crawl was going through and they were running scores, I saw the 11. I said, that's what I thought.
Yeah. And that was so important because that covered the spread.
Unbelievable.
Because it was 4 points was the spread. So, yeah, that was – what an ugly game that was, though. And I think it has some implications for this week, too. But yeah, so last week had some – a little bit of drama. It was a hard week to pick because so many teams were sitting starters, and it was hard to predict who was going to play who, and teams that started them weren't going to play them in the second half, et cetera. So – I felt really lucky to come out of that one with a winning record, because I was really, you know, bracing myself for a big losing week in week 18.
Well, that just shows you that the work pays off. And we look at this schedule of these six playoff games. And actually, before we even go through Seattle, San Francisco, and Jacksonville Chargers tomorrow, what's your take on this neutral field circumstance? They say now if it has to be played the way it might, that they'll play in Atlanta. And I understand all the circumstances around it, but there's a certain there's an unfair fairness to this.
Well, the unfairness is really the Bengals are the ones that I think are getting the worst deal here. Because they were just as much impacted by the ability to be a number one seed as anybody. I mean, you know, they could have won that game on Monday night, and then they could have won, and then they won against the Ravens last week. And so who knows? There was a plausible scenario where the Bengals could have been in contention for number one. So I think they're the ones that are the most, you know, kind of, they're getting the rawest deal out of this. But I do think that, you know, I get why they're doing it, you know, as a compromise to not give either team home field advantage. But I mean, look, what is home field advantage really worth in today's NFL, right? I mean, it's a difficult thing to quantify, although certainly gamblers are the ones who've been trying their best to quantify it. And I think we talked about this earlier in the season on your show, but, you know, a lot of the prevailing thought among the sort of analytics community is that home field advantage is worth about a little bit over a point. Now a point matters a lot when the whole season is on the line, sure. But you know, this neutral field stuff, I mean, there's something to be said about teams not having to travel or being home, et cetera, but they're so used to traveling. They're so used to playing in all different types of weather and all these different arenas. And you know, fans, et cetera, I'm not sure where it makes that huge of a difference, but it seems like a fair compromise to say, okay, well, if these two teams play each other, we'll play it on a neutral field. In some ways, I kind of feel like what might be a play more than actual advantage in the game is ego and, like, you know, deference to one team over another, right? That we aren't officially calling one team, you know, the regular season one seed, which I think is worthless.
All right, I wanted to get a read, because
I think that any of your fans, any of your listeners that are Bengals fans, they have a legitimate gripe here, more so than either the Chiefs or the Bills.
Agreed. All right, let's dive in, and I do have the early week. I printed the lines from early in the week, and then I printed them again this morning from that that site that has been so helpful, gridirongames.com, all season. They've been right on, pretty much right on the leading edge number wise. And I'm showing Seattle getting 9.5 in San Francisco. We heard earlier about James suggesting about the bad weather, how that impacts things. And then Jacksonville at home, they've been such a great story, and very pleased for Doug Peterson, you know, who gave the Eagles and all of us long-suffering Bird fans one of the greatest thrill of our life. In fact, yesterday was the anniversary of the win over the Falcons, which I was in attendance for, and in bitter cold. But anyway, Jacksonville getting 2.5 at home, home dogs, which is usually like a catnip for you.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm taking these Jags. I think that the Jags can win outright. The only sort of hitch in the giddy up here is that they listed Trevor Lawrence as questionable yesterday. I think he's still going to play. I think that was just a precautionary measure. They list him as questionable after practice. But I've been hearing things about this for the last week, that since last week's game, that he's been having some issues with his toe. So he's not 100%. You know, I'd rather know that he has a toe injury than, you know, a finger injury on his throwing hand like Teddy Bridgewater. But this is, you know, it's something that's concerning, I guess. But I'm taking the Jags. I don't know what Brandon Staley was thinking last week, putting his starters in this game, this essentially meaningless game, and possibly jeopardizing their season by doing it. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about, but he started everybody in the game against the Broncos, yeah, even though the outcome wouldn't have changed anything. And Mike Williams, who is, you know, their best receiver on a team that doesn't have, that is not very strong in the receiver core, leaves the game on a cart and can't even walk after the game. And then he didn't practice on Tuesday. So that's really concerning. Plus Joey Bosa, who is their best defensive player by far, who had missed 12 games this season, finally came back in week 17, made a huge impact on the defense, and then he gets hurt in that game. So they're, you know, it just seemed ridiculous that Brandon Staley would put these guys all in and put them in harm's way in a meaningless game, and now they got to face the Jags, and they're worse for wear.
So 2.5, did you get 2.5 or less?
Yeah, I got 2.5 there. It's still 2.5 everywhere. It has fluctuated, though. In fact, the Jags were not, they didn't open home dogs. The line has moved there because there was some action on the Chargers. But this is a game that, because the line has moved on both sides of the zero here, it's been pretty evenly bet, both in number of bets and money bet. So this is a game that the public and the professionals seem pretty evenly split on. Of course, you don't know who's got what number. But because this number has bounced around on both sides of the zero, you know, there's a lot of balanced action here.
How about the Niner game?
This is a harder game to figure out, right? It's a huge spread. I'm taking the points, you know, but it's tough because obviously the 49ers are by far the superior team here and should win the game. I'm taking the points just because I feel like it's a two-score spread, and it's just seemed like a lot of value because Seattle is not as big a dog in this situation as maybe, say, we'll talk about in a second, the Dolphins will be against the Bills. And, you know, the 49ers have Brock Purdy, who's done a good job, but this guy's a rookie, right? He's in his first playoff start. And, you know, Geno Smith is, you know, he's got an experience edge on Purdy here. Of course, the Shanahan offense, you know, you could basically put any quarterback in there with those targets and they're going to, you know, do well. But this is just not a team that wins by margin very often. And when they do, it's against really bad teams who essentially wave the white flag against them. You know, the Niners are a defensive team. And look, one of the things I wrote in my column is that the one thing that the Niners are bad at is covering deep passes. That's the one thing that they've suffered at this season. And Geno Smith is the man when it comes to deep passes. He is the most accurate quarterback and passes over 20 yards this season. This is a guy that knows how to air it out. So, you know, who knows? There may be a playbook here that Pete Carroll figures out how to exploit the weaknesses and put that defense to work. I predict it to be, you know, a low-scoring, closer game than people think, and that's why I'm taking the points. But, you know, the 49ers are definitely going to win this game in my mind. I think the 49ers have a real path to the Super Bowl here if they play it right, and if they get a little lucky. So I'm taking the points, but I'm taking the points and not, you know, I'm not betting, backing up the truck to bet on this game.
It's not a Dave Hill four-star play.
No, it's one I'm nervous about. The Jags I feel a lot more confident about. Definitely betting money on the Jags tomorrow.
All right, so we'll do a two check mark on the Jags, because I was going to have you sort of rank your plays. Let's get into Sunday, and it's a full afternoon, the 1 o'clock, the 4:30, and the 8:15. It's going to start in Buffalo, where, again, weather may impact, and Bills are given 13.5 by what I'm looking at.
Yeah, and I got 12.5 when I filed, and it's now 13.5. It's getting to the point where it's starting to, where Miami might look good. I mean, if they get this number to 14, I'm not sure I'd want to lay 14. That's not to say that I don't think the Bills can cover. It just feels like, why would you want to bet your money giving the Dolphins that big of a head start against you? Dolphins can't win this game with Skylar Thompson. They can't win it. He's not that game that they played last week with Skylar Thompson. It just didn't seem like Mike McDaniels even wanted to let him to throw it. That was a game where their season was on the line against the Jets. And there were key third down and fourth downs where essentially the whole game was on the line, and they weren't passing the ball. They were doing screens, you know, dink and dunk stuff, where it's like, what is going on here? This coach does not have much confidence in Skylar Thompson's ability to not throw an interception. And that's very worrisome going into a playoff game against the Bills, right? So, and the Bills defense. Plus, you know, Tyreek Hill rolled his ankle last week. Raheem Mostert broke his thumb. Now, they say Mostert's going to play, but I don't know how you have surgery on your thumb and then you suit up for a playoff game the same week. I just think the Dolphins they're too beat up. They're just not they're not bringing their best team to this game. This is going to be, it could be a rough game for them. Now, I don't want to lay 14 points, but I will lay 12.5. I do think that's a number the Bills can overcome, especially given that this is a home game for a fan base that is fired up for them. And DeMar Hamlin's out of the hospital, and he's going to be at the game. So, you know, there's a chance they may run up the score just for the fun of it. The Dolphins can't win this game.
All right, so we're assuming that it stays under 14. The Bills
at 14, I'd get it. Yeah, I start to take a second look at the Dolphins and think, I wonder what's there that can. But yeah, I like it so far. 12. Well, now it's 13.5, so it's really close to the edge. If your listeners haven't bet yet, I wouldn't bet on this game at 13.5 either. If you don't have to bet it, don't bet it. It's too big of a spread. But it's, you know, but at 12.5, I picked them at 12.5, and I'll pick them at 13.5. But it's not a huge, it's not something I love to do.
Fair enough. How about the Giants and the Vikings? This is one of those steamroller games where the universe is taking stands against the Vikings.
The world is on the. Well, yeah. I would say when I filed my column earlier this week, it was the Giants had like 98% of the money and like 88% of the bets were all on the Giants. That's moved a little bit. The 90% of money is still on the Giants, but the number of bets has split a bunch. All that shows is that there's a lot of public interest in the Vikings, right? Small money, public interest coming in on the Vikings. That means, you know, so if anything, that gives me more resolve that the Giants are the bright side here. I think the Giants are the right side. I think that we've talked about the Vikings a lot on your show. This is a team that professionals have been fading all season long, and they're doing it again this week. I mean, the Vikings have played. They've been beneficiary of a lot of good luck, a lot of randomness that has allowed them to kind of exceed what their exceed expectations. And you know, will this be the week that the horseshoe falls out of wherever it's wedged right now? I don't know, but I'm taking the Giants. I think that you know, one of the things, they just played on Christmas Eve and the Vikings beat the brakes off of them, and that's all true. But there was a little luck in that game too, right? There was a blocked punt. There were some turnovers. And the Giants are getting a lot of their defensive pieces back this week that they didn't have in that game, like Adoree Jackson, who's a very important cornerback for them. Azeez Ojulari and Leonard Williams are probably going to be back. So beefing up that defense is going to help them stop Minnesota from a lot of these big pass plays that they torched them with on Christmas Eve. I mean, Justin Jefferson got 133 yards in that game. and TJ Hockenson got 109. So that was a game where they really aired it out against the Giants. I don't think they do that this week. I think the Giants hold strong, and I think the Giants are going to win outright. But I bet money that I took the 3 points. So I feel good about that one.
The New York Football Giants. All right, and then Sunday night, Cincinnati, and the assumption is they will play all four quarters. Baltimore comes to town, and this feels like baked Raven on a plate.
Especially without Lamar, right? I mean, this is Anthony Brown. So they just played last week. We just saw them play. But it's kind of like you can draw a line through that game. I mean, Anthony Brown was quarterback. And he may be quarterback this week, too. You know, they say that Huntley in practice this week is not really throwing the ball. So he may still have some real soreness in that shoulder. And he may not play. I mean, if he does play, they're obviously trying to keep that shoulder on ice, and he may not be 100% if he does. If Anthony Brown plays, Anthony Brown was just terrible last week against the Bengals. But the other thing to remember is that the Ravens last week, they did not play Mark Andrews. They didn't play Dobbins. So Anthony Brown looked bad, but he also had, second and third string receivers in there with him. So it was really a practice squad. We're going to see the Bengals will – I mean, the Ravens will leave it all on the line. But it's just they're up against a Bengals team that has just got a full head of steam behind them. And the Bengals, I think, are playing as good as they've been. They're 23-1 against the spread going back to last season. You know, they've won 8 straight games. This is a team that does know how to win by margin. And, last week's game was a little bit of an exception because the Bengals in the second half didn't do much at all. They got 90 yards of offense in the second half and just a field goal. But that's all they needed because they had built up such a big lead in the first half. You know, it's kind of like that's how the Eagles have been winning games this season, too. So I liked 7. That felt like a good number, and I got it. The number has moved because there's so much Bengals money. I think now it's 9.5 and 10 everywhere.
Yeah.
So I think, I still like them. I think you want to grab 9.5, though, if you can, because I could see this being a 10-point game easy. The Ravens defense, that's one of their strong suits. So. If you want the Bengals, I think you want to get 9.5 today before that number, because it's 10 at Pinnacle now. And when it's 10 at Pinnacle, that means it won't be long before it's 10 everywhere. So get that hook while you can get it.
Who day?
That's right.
Who day think going to beat them Bengals?
I'm very bullish on the Bengals. I wouldn't be surprised to see the Bengals in the Super Bowl again this year, just the way that they're playing. They're just gelling.
Yep, agreed. And that poor start is a distant memory. Gets us to the Monday night game, and the NFL knows what it's doing, putting this game on for Monday night. It's just like the NFL to make us root, to make a big percentage of the country root for Tom Brady, which is hard to accept, but okay, I'll do it.
Would you believe that after this entire season of me, complaining about the Buccaneers, here I am, I'm picking them again. They're picking them again, and I just do not learn my lesson, Steve. Your fans should fade me here because I've been wrong with the Bucs every week this season. I'm picked them again. All I can say is that if I'm wrong this week, at least it's the last time I'm going to be wrong about the Bucs this season. But I'm picking the Bucs, and I just don't know what else to do. I mean, the Cowboys last week, Mike McCarthy said they were trying to win that game. They went in, they played their starters, they said, we're playing to win. And they just looked awful. They gave up, that defense, which is an elite defense, gave up over 300 yards to this Washington team that was playing somebody named Sam Howell at quarterback. I mean, it was a travesty. It was hard to watch for those of us that picked the Cowboys in that game. And look, the Cowboys just have not looked the same. They had a game where they just absolutely demolished the Colts a number of weeks back. And since that game, they have really looked off. I mean, they've had their wins have been close wins against bad teams, or they've been losing to good teams, and they just do not look good. And Dak Prescott's got to throw an interception every game. It's concerning for a team that I think had everybody when they were starting to peak, everybody was really feeling high about the Cowboys, and now they really sputtered at the end of the season. You know, the Buccaneers, I've complained about them on your show a lot. I don't know what to say about them other than 2 weeks ago in week 17, we saw a Buccaneer team that looked like they had manifested from some other universe, where they had 432 passing yards, 207 passing yards to Mike Evans, and he caught three touchdowns in that game. And Mike Evans hadn't caught a touchdown since week four. So it just seemed like I don't know what happened in week 17 where the Buccaneers, a different Buccaneers team came out of the locker room than we'd seen all season. And then last week they went back to their old dink and dunk tricks. I'm just hoping that week 17 game proved to Bowles that he doesn't need to run on first down anymore. He can probably let Leonard Fournette, you know, get a few less touches and let Brady do what he does best. Because that game in week 17 seemed to be a recipe for success for this team. And if they go back to that and show a little more confidence in their receivers this week, I think they might be able to take advantage of whatever it is that the Cowboys are struggling with.
Yeah. The Cowboys, I was able to tune in and watch a little bit of that. I was on the other channel on Sunday, and a travesty of a mockery of a sham, as Woody might say. It was unbelievable. It was actually unbelievable. I mean, Will Schwartz and Johnny D and I are always texting back and forth, you know, when the Redskins got up, I thought, oh, okay. But then
the Commanders, Steve.
The Commanders, excuse me. It's so hard. It's so hard. Well,
this is a game where I'm not going to be surprised no matter what happens in this game. It's a game where I just have no idea what's going to happen. You know, like the Cowboys could absolutely demolish the Buccaneers if we see the same Buccaneers team we've seen all season long. But, you know, some of this is recency bias where I'm saying based on what I've seen in the last couple of weeks, I'm putting my money on the Buccaneers to, you know, on Brady's sheer determination to not go out in the first round.
Yeah. Yep.
And playing at home is a big advantage for them. I think here, you know, we'll see.
I see people quoting, Brady's 7-0 against the Cowboys. Like that's got some bearing on this.
I mean, exactly.
You got to be kidding me. What are you talking about? Games from 24 years ago. We're going to worry about him. Come on.
As if the picture on the side of the helmet is what makes a difference in how he plays the game. Yeah, I mean, the trends are all, you know, these trends are sort of a disease in football handicapping where people talk about trends that have no statistical relevance whatsoever, and they use that to sort of buttress up their, you know, their feelings about it. But I think you're exactly right. I mean, in football, those are different football teams, and you know, every football game is really two football games, right? It's an offense for it's two different offenses versus two different defenses, even week to week. And you know, the idea that Tom Brady, and I'm guilty of this too. I just said that I'm betting on the Bucs because I'm betting on Brady. But like, you know, the truth is the Bucs are in the playoffs right now because of their defense, not because of Tom Brady, right? I mean, Tom Brady did win some games for them this season with some late game heroics where he, you know, there have been three or four games this season that they won that they should have lost because he ran really good late game drives. But you also have to give the defense the credit for those games because the defense was who kept those games close when that offense was three and out. So, you know, the Buccaneers defense are, I think, you know, who's going to make a difference in any game that they play. And they've had a top three defense consistently all season long. And, you know, they'd be even better if they didn't have to be on the field so much.
There you go.
You know what I mean?
Yep. Fair point.
You know, it's a team sport.
Well, it team sport, but Dave Hill stands alone in selecting these games. Six this weekend, four next weekend, and then 2-1. So we're down to...
Job's getting a little easier every week.
13 games... is that right? Yeah, 13 games left to pick. And it's been just tremendous having Dave Hill every week. Dave, good luck. Talk next week.
Talk to you then. Thanks, guys. Good luck.
David Hill, everybody. Dave Hill 77 on your Twitter. Let's take a break. Quick one. Last one. We've got Nick Tamaro rolling in, Keith Shamblin, Papo. And Papo, you and I got to do Tampa. We're going to have to do Tampa because I do not have a Tampa set of Tampa opinions, an opinion maker, as it were. All right. Hour three, 15 minutes in and 45 to swing around here. Twinspires. Weekend preview at the races. Nick Tamaro joins us next.
The latest racing news. It's at the races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions. And offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful and